Caught Offside with Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney.
Oh, yes! Caught Offside from the Upper West Side of Manhattan. Andrew Gundling, JJ Devaney. What's up, man?
That was a nice oh yes, considering you feel a bit under the weather.
Yeah. I wasn't going to bring that up, though, because I don't want to sound like a whiny baby.
No, but I will say if there's a lag in energy, it won't be coming
there won't
from
be.
Me.
There won't be.
You do look a little bit.
I know.
Yeah.
It's not good. It's not good.
But it's nothing coming out of the bum and nothing coming out of the mouth. It's
right.
A cold.
Yeah. Hopefully right. That's all it is.
Right.
I wasn't going to talk about any of this, and now you've made me out into this just weak, soulless figure.
What would you have preferred we open with? Brexit?
I would have just hoped we would start talking about soccer and sports.
All right.
This sports really, like, sports will put you on a real roller coaster. Like, I know we know that, but just like.
Well, your weekend or.
This weekend was wild.
You got saved.
Kind of. Like, the Manchester United win over Spurs was probably Tottenham's most gut-wrenching loss of the
sure.
season. And then the Eagles happened. And, like, I'm ready after the Eagles to just check out on sports. Sometimes I'll do that,
yeah.
Mainly for when the Eagles playoff, when their season ends. I sometimes feel like, you know what, I need 2 weeks.
I understand
I'm just going to, like, binge watch shows. Like, I don't want to even watch SportsCenter or whatever. Now, I happen to work in sports, so it's hard to do this. But I was like, you know what, Monday night, Syracuse is playing Duke. Like, as a Syracuse grad, as someone who's obsessed with the team, I gotta watch. Like I'd hate myself forever if they lost that game. And then they go and beat Duke in overtime. It was like one of the greatest games I've ever seen. Sports will just, it's what's great and terrible about sports all at once.
Just when you thought you were out, they pull you back in.
Yeah, and now I'm back in. And now I'm watching everything again like it all never. I almost felt guilty being happy yesterday after the Syracuse game because I was like, the Eagles deserve more of a period of mourning.
No, because you're still reflecting upon the fact that you are the reigning Super Bowl champions for another couple of weeks anyways.
Yeah, I wasn't angry, but I was really, really kind of like, you know, it was a heartbreaking loss.
I was heartbroken for Spurs.
Oof, we're going to talk about that. Oh, boy. That was something. I don't want to, look, I know that this is not a Tottenham podcast. This is a general soccer podcast.
Oh,
so
you'd love it to be a Tottenham podcast.
So I'm going to try not to have like a tone of bitterness over it. Manchester United fans listen to this podcast just as much as Tottenham fans
and we
do,
should
so we're
acknowledge
try to be down the middle.
OGS, as you're calling them on the rundown now.
I can't type. I, you could ask me 10 times to spell the last name Solskjaer, and I might spell it differently on all 10 of those times. So
yeah.
Let's just, OGS, everybody knows who we're talking about.
Well, Clive Tildley used to say it differently.
Original Solskjaer. Original gangster Solskjaer.
Solskjaer, and then when he scored, Solskjaer has done it!
Yeah. So we're going to talk about him. And whether or not momentum is starting to build in his favor to potentially permanently become the manager of Manchester United. Obviously, we're going to talk about David De Gea and kind of a performance for the ages at Wembley the other day. We'll talk about it from Spurs' perspective because not only did they lose a game that they probably felt like they should have won, they also lost their best player. And they didn't just lose him. They lost him for a while. And that is bad. That is bad news, Bears. And we're going to talk about De Gea. We're going to talk about Petr Cech. We're even going to talk about Sunderland because they're making waves here in the United States with the Netflix documentary Sunderland Till I Die with David Preece, who will be back on the program shortly. Red card, man of the match. I'm really feeling good, JJ, about my red card and my man of the match.
I'm feeling good about the mailbag because there was a lot of tasty things were thrown up. We're going to have a Lampard-Gerrard watch, which will be most...
I better start looking for it. I found it.
Well, it's mostly going to be a Lampard watch. Or rather, who was watching him?
Ooh.
And Gerrard, they're just out in... Rangers are currently on... It's the Scottish winter break.
Right.
So they're currently out, I think, in somewhere sunny. And Gerrard is joining in training, pinging 40-yard passes and making his players look inferior.
I mean, I don't care how old he gets. You never lose that, right?
Yeah.
You may lose pace, but I don't think you lose the ability to do something like that.
Yeah, but you don't lose it. And he's not out of the game long enough.
He's not 50.
No.
Is he even like 30?
You want to see the pass he played, though.
All right.
It was, and of course, Rangers social media were all over it.
I should say, too, for my man of the match, for the people who don't typically make it that deep into the podcast, because it's always at the end, but who like when I give you trivia, my man of the match is heavy on the trivia. So I'm giving you reason either to stick around or to just fast forward.
I am not
right
in
to
a,
the
I'm not in a trivia mood. Oh, God.
Why? What's wrong with you?
You're under the weather. I don't want to be quizzed, put on the spot like I'm in some kind of interrogation
room.
What
does my sickness have to do with your ability to answer questions?
We both have our ailments.
Why don't you go do the show from in there if you're so worried about getting sick? Go. I can see you through the glass.
Outbreak monkey.
Let's see. Let's talk about, like I said before, Manchester United and their 1-0 victory over Spurs. Oh, JJ, happy days are here again for Manchester United. It's amazing how quickly it's all changed.
Yeah, and now it's kind of not so much, what a good interim appointment, the buzz is back. It's kind of switched to, should this guy get the job going forward forever? And it's just amazing the little things that the just little things that are happening. Sir Alex Ferguson's there. He's laughing at the game. We know he's been around the training ground. We know he's been talking to Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. But what we're discovering is that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's coaching methods and the things Fergie did are now rubbing off in training.
Yeah.
We've heard that he's playing the older guys against the younger guys, which was a Fergie game. He took them out to Dubai. He worked on tactics, but also heavily on attacking play. You know, Fergie, straight from the Fergie notebook. And we saw at Wembley that this is a team that's it's still problematic. It's not perfect. But look at Lindelof's performance. Look at the goalkeeper's performance. Look at Pogba's moments, because I still don't think he's 100% there. Look at Rashford and Martial.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's amazing what a smile and a positive attitude can do.
Like, you're making light of that, but I do believe that that is part of
it
management.
Absolutely is. The stats in terms of sprinting, that stat is such a measure of the intangible of they're trying hard. And the Mourinho, I know he played a different tactic in a different formation, but if you look at the Mourinho stats, I mean, they were only just ahead of, the only team they were ahead of in the Premier League in terms of sprints, most sprints, was Fulham. Or most ground covered, or whatever. And now they're ahead of everyone.
Wouldn't have guessed that, by the way.
Yeah. Unbelievable. Yeah. Like, he's turned around so many little things.
Now, if you'll allow me to put on my Spursy Andy bitterness pants, here's the only thing I will say, and then I will go immediately back into defending.
That could have been
Solskjaer.
4-1.
Well, here's the thing, is I saw a headline that says Solskjaer's plan is coming together as Manchester United defeat Spurs at Wembley. I'm sorry, was the plan to lose 5-1? Tottenham had at least 6 or 7 chances than the one that United scored on. So, like, I do think that we need to pump the brakes a little bit on throwing the man a parade after that performance. Yeah, they got the 3 points. So if you want to ask the question of whether or not he passed his first true test since he took over after playing a run of poor opposition, how can I argue with the fact that, yes, he did? They got the points. But, I mean, like, you watch the game, JJ. How many Tottenham? This is the same Tottenham side that we talked about against Everton, who were ruthless, who it seemed like every single opportunity they put on net, they scored on. Sometimes you have days like that. I guess the soccer gods made up for it on a day like this, when it's just like one opportunity after another. Either De Gea is from another planet, or it's Llorente kind of scuffing one, or Son scuffing one, or Alderweireld just putting it kind of at De Gea's feet. It was just, I don't know how you explain it. It was just kind of one of those days for Tottenham. Their build-up play was brilliant at times. Their, you know, intricate passing moves. Like,
look,
I can't get on them. It was just some bad finishing combined with some out-of-this-world goalkeeping combined with one great counterattack from United.
Yes. Spurs looked every inch the well-drilled, well-oiled unit. But, and I don't want to come down on Kieran Trippier, but when you're so much in control and you're playing such a high line, what was he thinking of with that pass? Because that's what United were waiting for. And to give Pogba his credit, Andrew, I believe if that is under Mourinho, he takes another touch. Instead, he made sure he got the ball out of his feet and he whipped a perfect ball into the space. And Rashford, who has been working on finishing with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, no better master, no better pupil, and it's in the back of the net. Now, what I will say about Spurs is they peppered the goal. All it takes for the floodgates to open is for the ball to be a few inches the other side of David De Gea. But everything seemed to be where he could get to it. And that was the story of the game. And that's not bitterness against Man United. That's not being pro-Spurs. No, that's just a fact.
It's what happened.
It is what happened.
Now, I will come back and I will now defend Solskjaer, because you say, you know, if that's Pogba under Mourinho, maybe he takes another touch. It's not just Rashford practicing his finishing or whatever. It is that entire play, the way that it went down. This is from Ander Herrera on Manchester United's website. He talks about Solskjaer and the tactics that he implemented and how it just like perfectly set up that goal. Herrera says, the manager told us that at the beginning of the game, it would be difficult to make short passes. He told us it would be easier for us to switch the play and to look, almost without looking, to the other side of the pitch to switch the ball, because that is where we were going to find spaces. We scored like that, so thank you to the game plan as well. That was Herrera talking about Solskjaer, his tactics coming into the game.
For sure, but it's also the manager, Solskjaer, having faith that they'll make those runs. I don't think they were making those runs under Mourinho because they never thought the ball was going to get there. And you look at Martial, who could have, for all Spurs' chances, he could have opened the scoring when again Trippier miscontrols the ball and they break. Look, it was a mixture of perfect game plan and, look, you want a lucky general. And so far, Solskjaer has proven that he's got a plan. He's brought in a good atmosphere into the locker room, but he's also been lucky. And this was his luck against Spurs.
Yeah. Now, let's talk a little bit more about this idea of momentum building behind him getting the job. Now, we talked to Craig Burley last week, and I asked him the question. Yeah. I didn't necessarily say, it was kind of a leading question. I said, you know, does it really make sense that if Solskjaer goes on and does all this great for United, does it really make sense that he wouldn't even be considered? And Craig said, of course that makes sense. It's Solskjaer. He has no experience. Manchester United should not entrust a guy like that with them going forward. I get that side of it, certainly, but I don't like dealing in hypotheticals, but you know, if they do continue this sort of whatever this enthusiasm is that they're playing with, it's working for them. They are a different side than what they were a month and a half ago. You know, if they go on some kind of European run in the Champions League, if they do find a way back into the top four, if they go on some kind of FA Cup run, I don't know if any combination of those things happen. It's going to be very interesting because I don't think the decision is as cut and dry, as much as I love Craig, as what Craig made it sound like last week.
No, and certainly when you're hearing rumours about Manchester United considering Gareth Southgate, his club CV is marginally better than Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's, and maybe it isn't, because at least Ole Gunnar Solskjaer has won championships with Molde. The thing for me, Andrew, is the test to come. There will be, say for example, PSG open up and batter them, which I honestly don't think is going to happen now. That would be something that would be a huge problem for him. But say they were to get a result against PSG and a result at the end of February against Liverpool, like a win, like that, he will be in serious consideration. There's more to it than that, though. Would Ed Woodward look at him and say, I've been pushed and pressed to have this kind of interlocutor between manager and myself on transfers, on the direction of the club, and I need somebody who is steeped in the values of the style of play and of what Manchester United is or was under Sir Alex Ferguson. Would there be a better person to make a director of football than Ole Gunnar Solskjaer?
That's an interesting thought too.
Now, I definitely think that, you know, three games, three bad results, and you will see him slide out of the picture.
Oh, yeah, this could really change fast.
Absolutely, and that's why I'm loath to say, I know it was a great win against Spurs, and I know he's beaten the opposition put in front of him. You can definitely feel the vibe improving around the club, but it's going to take a little bit more. But that might be just to win another round of the Champions League.
Now, to the chorus of people out there who are saying he has no experience, his first real job can't be at United, I would kind of tell those people to look at that and say, is what he's gaining right now, does that not count? Like, this is now experience. He is managing Manchester United right now. He is going to be playing PSG in a Champions League. And what's more, if you're worried about his selections in a transfer market or something like that, okay, fine, I could understand that. But what have we talked about with United under Mourinho? That it's not just about who Manchester United want, it's about elite-level players needing to want to come there as well.
Right.
We didn't think that was going to be the case with Mourinho, with what we saw happen to guys like Pogba and players of that caliber. You know, if Solskjaer can turn them back into a club that marquee players want to go to because they're playing a more open style, there seems to be a more fun feeling around the club, you know, that's important
and,
as well.
And the massive wages and prestige of the club are still going to count. If he engineers a top-four finish and gets another round of the Champions League under his belt, he will be one of the front runners for the job for sure. Now, I said, I have to call myself out. I said at the start that there's no way to look at his appointment, even in the interim, as anything other than crazy.
You mocked me.
No.
I suggested that maybe this could become a real thing.
No. I mean when he got the job in the first place. It was a left field kind of, let's just put a hero in, very much like what Nottingham Forest are doing with Martin O'Neill and Roy Keane now, giving them the job. Let's take someone from the past to give a feel-good in a bad area. Or a bad moment for the club. But that doesn't mean it's not working. And it has worked so far.
Do you consider Robbie Musto a trusted source of soccer knowledge?
I like Robbie Musto.
Well, here's what he said about it on NBCSN. If the win versus Spurs enhances Solskjaer's chances of getting the job.
Yeah, it does affect it, I think. You know, and I think we said pre-game that Solskjaer can make himself the number two choice. Now, if there's anything between now and the end of the season where United board say, you know what, I don't care about anybody else, we want this guy, then that would be remarkable. That would be remarkable. And I know it's tough to say right now, but I still think that their number one target were the Pochettino. But I've got to go on and say, like Rashford said there, this was different today. Mm. This was different. And he made a big change tactically and positionally with Rashford position and Lingard. Now, that's tough to do when you've been going so well. And he said it in his interview that he's been working on tactical and philosophical situations. He did it today in the first half. It worked out. Rashford scored, and the Spurs players didn't when they had the opportunity. So Rashford, of course, and De Gea, the main guys. But Solskjaer today, with that game plan, particularly in the first half, just top marks to him.
What philosophical issues has he been working on? That would be interesting to me. Calls Marcus Rashford, goes over, he says, take that strike with the outside of your boot, okay? Also, what's your thoughts on Descartes?
That could happen.
Philosophical. He's right, though. He's painted himself into the picture where he wasn't before.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Let's talk about De Gea, because he was obviously, I mean, this was as much of a man-of-the-match performance as a keeper can give you. It was just one are-you-kidding-me moment after another.
It was more likely that a deflection was going to beat him. Something crazy, or, you know, someone gives away Lindelof or Phil Jones.
But like, these are
gives away a penalty. Phil Jones fouls Harry Kane on that header. He's all over him. Any other place on the field, that is a free kick. It's just the. I mean,
yeah, I was okay. I wasn't screaming for a penalty.
It's a penalty. It's such a penalty. But anyway,
Kane still got good contact, and
yeah, he should have scored.
Probably should have buried it. Yeah, no, you're right.
And also there was decision making, like the Dele chance where he's running through on goal. Why does he take that extra touch? He's closing his own angle.
He put himself in a little too close, maybe.
It was a game of chicken, and De Gea just read him perfectly. Look, another day, that's 2-1, 3-1.
He's as good with his legs as any keeper I've ever seen.
Yeah, and he I was thinking about some of the saves he made. Like the one from Alderweireld, if he tries to go at that with his hand, it slides in underneath him. It's just brilliantly done.
It's got to be just, like, how much is how much is just instinct?
A lot of that's instinct, but it's also working on your footwork, I'm sure. It has to be.
Yeah. How about this stat? This has nothing to do with De Gea's skill as a keeper. It has to do with my screaming at the television, watching this game as this was all transpiring.
Is this a blood pressure stat?
Well, did you notice watching that game that he just took forever on every goal
kick? Kickouts, yeah.
Now, I actually have a number that can tell you how long he took. This is courtesy of Spurs Statman on Twitter.
What, 45 seconds?
Oh, 45 seconds. Is that your guess? JJ, nearly 5% of today's game, this was from over the weekend, nearly 5% of today's game was spent waiting for David De Gea to take his goal kicks. 10 goal kicks with an average of 26 seconds per kick.
That definitely came from the manager, too.
4.81% of the game was just spent waiting for him. But yeah, VAR takes too long. Okay, but we'll spend 5% of a game just watching a guy stand there kick his boots against the post.
Did the ref book him or even talk to him?
No, which was an abomination.
That's where the ref has to get involved. Don't be talking about VAR or anything. That's where the ref goes in and books him. I remember the Israeli goalkeeper at Lansdowne Road in a World Cup qualifier. I cannot remember his name, but what a clown. He did the same thing in a qualifier. Ireland went 2-0 up. Israel equalised, and from 2-2 onwards, the guy sucked the life out of the game in a way I have never witnessed since. As bad as De Gea was, this guy was unbelievable. Teeing up the ball, setting it on the grass, that took 35 seconds alone.
And I don't even mean it as like, Even if you're
it's a tactic, it always has
even
been.
Even if you're a neutral fan, though, is that like you want to spend 5% of your game with that happening?
I blame the Spurs multi-ball boys and ball girls. They were off their game.
No, how dare you? They were on their game. I made specific note of how quickly they were getting the ball back in. I won't have that. Not on this show. I don't mean to take away from De Gea, though. He was phenomenal. Let's talk more about him now with one of our favorite guys to have on this program, because anytime anything goalkeeper-related comes up, you just lose your mind and start just like going through months of David Priest tweets.
Well, hang on. That's not true. And don't shame me in front of David Priest. We had David Priest on in the summer to discuss England as well. So this isn't a new thing for us.
Good point. It's a good point. He is one of our favorite guys to speak with. You hear him all over the place. Various podcasts, the Totally Football Show, Football Weekly.
iNews talking about Warnock and Brexit.
And now he's on with us. David Priest back on the show. David, what's up, man? How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, of course. JJ just mentioned the World Cup, and I guess it's an interesting place to start in talking about David De Gea. For anyone who maybe forgot how good of a keeper he was after the World Cup, where there was even talks of Spain maybe replacing him, I'd say that they were reminded over the weekend of just how great a player he is. I mean, is he the best? I guess you could say the best in the league. Is he the best in Europe right now?
Well, do you know what? When we talk about goalkeepers now, we talk about different styles and different sort of philosophies, that how they fit in the teams. And I think for his kind and for his style, you've got to see that there's himself and certainly Jan Oblak at Atletico Madrid, the two keepers of their ilk that are top of the tree at the moment. Like, we know how far goalkeeping has moved on, certainly in the last 5 to 10 years as well. So, like I said, it's all about the different styles. Just the same way you can have a predatory striker like Sergio Aguero, or you have an all-rounder like Robert Lewandowski here. You have your different styles. So sometimes it's a little bit more difficult to compare now.
You were talking stylistically, and I don't want to throw big Neville Southall into the conversation this early, but I think it's interesting. So I was listening to him a year ago, and I want to get your take on this. Southall ranked Lloris above De Gea for probably the very reason De Gea stood out at the weekend, was that he made so many saves with his feet. And he said that is a marker of bad technique. I'm presuming you would disagree with that.
Yeah, to a certain extent. I mean, I don't know how far removed Neville is from the game these days, or whether he's still coaching or whatever. And somebody like Neville Southall, goalkeeping doesn't, you know, the basics of goalkeeping never change. But I think just certainly over the past few years, there's been a more of a trend towards training saves with your feet. And I mentioned this in a piece I did for the Times today, that where it's the a goalkeeper stands traditionally, where we were taught in Britain, is sort of you have to have your feet sort of shoulder width apart. Mm. So it kind of gives you enough solid base so you can get to everything. Whereas in certain situations, you have to throw away the fact that you have to try to get everything. You try to put things in your favour. So if somebody's coming on an angle 1v1, it's a very tight angle for them. Things are in your favour a little bit. So for you to cover the whole of that goal, you don't want to be sort of crouching down low and have your hands or trying to make sure that you can get down low with your hands, because that, to top-class goal strikers, opens up the opportunity to lift it into to the roof of the net. Now, you've seen Sergio Aguero do that to David De Gea. You've seen other people do it to Alisson this season. And it's difficult for keepers to cover everything. So why not just give yourself a neutral position, neutral hand position, and just trust your feet to block the balls that come low? I think it's just a more efficient way of saving it. And also, when you get when you do get contact with the ball, you're more likely to get the ball out of danger and away from the strikers that are oncoming. If you use your feet, it's a harder surface to hit and to deflect the ball away from.
Yeah, some of what I've been wondering about from having watched that game, and I don't mean this as a slight to De Gea, but how much of it was great goalkeeping and how much of it was just poor finishing?
Listen, I'm kind of the same train of thought as a lot of people on that, where, yeah, you've got to say that the routine saves that he was expected to make. I always think back to USA against Belgium when Tim Howard made those 16 saves, and he was lauded as a national hero. Where he's probably made two or three saves that have extended him, other than sort of just routine saves. And this was a little bit the same. But I think with David De Gea's performance at the weekend, you've got to take into account that his positioning and his decision making was perfect. It was absolutely faultless all the way through the game. Now, I think about the Toby Alderweireld's save, mm-hmm. where he moves into position early up near post area, kind of predicting what's going to happen and putting things in his favour, and yeah, it paid off for him.
David, there was a big retirement news today, and I, of course, checked your Twitter, like Andrew says I always do, and you were a little bit surprised that we're going to be saying goodbye to Petr Cech at this point. What shocked you about that announcement?
Just the fact that, despite that, you know, a kind of common misconception that, you know, that he'd had a steep decline over the past couple of seasons, I still see him do a very good job for a lot of top sides, not just in the Premier League, outside the Premier League. He's still a very solid goalkeeper. And I think the criticisms that have come his way over the last, certainly last three seasons, a lot of that has been down to what's been in front of him and the lack of consistency and stability in front of him. And I think that he's come from one defence which was rock solid at Chelsea, where everyone knew each other's jobs, they played with each other a long time, certainly him and John Terry, in a sort of defensive disarray at times at Chelsea, and that doesn't really help him at all. So I think you look at the data, you look at the stats, he still holds up with the best keepers and top keepers around Europe. And I think he could have done it. It's two, maybe it's 4 years, and it's credit to him maybe that he's taken a step back. Maybe it's a motivation thing. Maybe he's not willing just to sit in the background and be a really good backup for somebody else, which he could do for three or four seasons. But again, he could play he could play 40, 50 games a season, no problem. Apart from the serious head injury he had, he's been pretty lucky with long term injuries anyway.
It's interesting you say that about how his stats continue to match up with other great keepers. I mean, do you look at that and think that maybe Arsenal made a mistake in jumping the gun to replace him, that maybe some of that money on Leno could have been used on defenders instead? Or did you see something in Czech where maybe he was deteriorating and shouldn't have been a number one anymore?
No, I certainly think that, it's a right choice to bring in competition for him, and sort of certainly if they want a successor, and he's a successor in, that was the right thing to do. Whether Bernardo was the right choice, I'm still not too sure on that. But it's, like I said, even with his feet, you know, I think sometimes he looks a little bit uncomfortable. He looks a bit cumbersome, and maybe he's not as fluid as many keepers you see these days. But people forget, you know, he came to goalkeeping in his teenage years. He was a centre forward before that. And of course, the pressure that he was put under, I would attribute that again to his defence, because some of the decisions that defenders were taking to pass the ball back to him and the positions they were taking up to receive the ball again, sometimes they were non-existent, and you could see they were as uncomfortable as he was taking it. So it's, like I said, it was a little bit harsh lumping all the criticism his way.
David, that we have you in or on the podcast right now is kind of timely, seeing as where you're from, everyone can tell by your accent. Sunderland Till I Die is causing, I don't know, would you call it a stir over here, but people have been fascinated by it on Netflix. Mm. They've watched it. We've been getting a lot of reaction to it. And in the wake of Netflix dropping this series, there have been a few players who've come out. Kevin Kilbane in particular has talked about the pressure of playing at Sunderland. And it's kind of curious because we don't see them up there as a massive football club where pressure is everywhere. But I was just curious to get your take on that. Is it really that kind of hothouse of football up there? And are the fans really that kind of almost intrusive and suffocating?
Yeah, to a certain extent. You know, like I've had friends sort of who've played for Sunderland sort of in the years since I left, and where they were uncomfortable going to the supermarket. You know, because people just come up to them and criticise them, and I found throughout my career, and you often find that the best fans can be the worst and the most critical, because there's no in between. To be so fanatical and so supportive sometimes, the criticism can be exactly the same the opposite side as well. But I think what the guys at Full Wheel 73 who produced and directed it, what they've noticed straight away and what they've cottoned on to is that Sunderland is about the fans. The biggest strength of the club is its fans and the people of the city, because it's, you know, I go back most weekends up there and to visit family. I've got a daughter who lives up there, and you know, there isn't a great deal in Sunderland. It's a great town, it's a great city with great people, but there isn't a great deal there. It's not a prosperous city as it once was. So you take away that football club and you take away Nissan, which, you know, which is a big source of jobs in the city. There isn't a great deal there, and it's the football club means so much to that area. You could see in the series there that I think that came across well. And for me, I should have been a part of it. Actually, I did a couple of sort of talking head interviews at the start, and I just couldn't keep it up. You know, when they needed me back in Sunderland, that I couldn't be there. And at the time when I was, you know, when I was doing the interviews and sort of commenting on things, you just wonder whether it could have been a real car crash and a real disaster for the club. But like I said, the fact that they focused on the fans and the people behind the scenes at the club, I think that's what showed the great strength of it.
I'm curious, you talk about, you know, people coming up to you in the grocery store and things like that. You ever find yourself just pumping gas up in Sunderland and a guy wants to criticize you for a goal you let in? I mean, is that like a thing you could relate to from your time there?
Oh, no, certainly. Yeah, I mean, I've had the sort of the ups and downs of any player, you know, because I've, you know, you go through bad patches. And certainly when I was up in Aberdeen, you know, they were very similar fans up in Aberdeen, Scotland. They, you know, I've had, when I first went up there, we didn't have a great time. The team wasn't playing well, and my car vandalised. Do you know what? But then on the flip side of it, I remember the first time I ever went to New York. I was in it might have been like a Virgin megastore at Times Square, something like that. And a young Aberdeen fan came up the other Aberdeen strip on, and he come and asked me for my autograph in the middle of Times Square.
Wow!
And the funniest thing was that obviously a few people around saw, and I must have signed about 30 autographs after I'd signed his autograph, simply because somebody they must have thought I was somebody, that I was famous. So for that young fan asking for my autograph, I thank him for my 15 minutes of fame in New York.
Yeah, I think you're selling Aberdeen's fan base in New York short. It goes typically Yankees, Aberdeen, Giants, usually how it lays out. Well, thanks so much for joining us, man. We're always interested to pick your brain on all things goalkeeper-related and Sunderland-related and really just soccer-related. David Priest, as always, thanks, man.
Pleasure.
So the story I was referring to with Kevin Kilbane was that he would be in the store, in the shops, just like David said, and someone, a Sunderland fan, would look into his basket and go, "You don't want to be eating that." But the best story he told was he was out with his wife for dinner, or his girlfriend at the time, I think. He's 21 or 22, and he sits in for dinner, and I don't know how nice the restaurant was, but a Sunderland fan shakes his hand, and you think that's fine, takes a picture, and I don't think Kevin was that long at the club, and he sits down beside Kilbane and his girlfriend for 25 minutes.
Oh.
And Kilbane was like, what are you doing? And he felt like he couldn't say anything to the fan.
You kind of can't, especially if you're a young player.
And you've only just got there. Now, he had a miserable time. He had only a few, I'd say, good months there. He did not enjoy his time at Sunderland. He was much happier at Everton when he went there. And the fans used to get on his back. But imagine that. You're at dinner. What do you say?
People need to have some sense.
They don't. They feel as if they own you. And Sunderland's one of those towns. So I heard all these stories coming out after Sunderland Till I Die, and I had to ask David, and he corroborated my evidence.
Yeah. So our thanks to him, as always. Love catching up with him. Before we move on, JJ, I did want to mention about Tottenham, because the big news today was that the MRI of Harry Kane's ankle came back.
Is that the same ankle he injured before the World Cup?
I'd have to look.
All right, okay. Well.
But the news was, it was about as bad, I think, as it could have been.
Yeah.
So now it did reveal ligament damage, and he's going to be out for at least a month. They're saying sometime in March
right.
He'll be expected to return, which is a brutal blow to them, not only because they're coming off a loss in a kind of a demoralizing loss against Manchester United. It's a brutal blow also because they're losing Son to the Asian Cup. He left the club after the United game. They're still kind of dealing with injuries. Now, I think Eric Dier is starting to train again. I think Victor Wanyama is getting closer to returning. But, you know, those guys aren't strikers. And for Son and Kane to both be gone at the same time with some really important matches coming up, you're talking about missing now the Champions League matches against Borussia Dortmund.
So I'm presuming Llorente goes nowhere then.
You can't sell him. I mean, it seemed like he was halfway out the door. Then he goes and scores 1,000 goals against Tranmere Rovers, and he works his way right back into Spurs' good graces. But they really don't have a choice now, and I don't know what they do. I mean, is Dele Alli now expected to kind of move into more of a central attacker spot? Is he going to play up top with maybe Lucas Moura, who missed the match over the weekend through injury himself?
Is someone going to come into the club?
You know, it's so funny how... You're right. Like, that's a natural thought for a normal fan to have. But when you're a fan of this club, that, like, if somebody comes in, that is bonus. That is extra credit. Like, that is not even like a flicker of a thought in my head because of the way this club is now seemingly operating. So I'm just looking at the guys who were there, and I guess it's going to be Dele, Lucas Moura, Llorente, some sort of combination of those guys. You know, I love Dele Alli. I love Lucas Moura. I don't think a ton of Fernando Llorente at this stage in his career. I mean, is this a group that, like, is Pochettino going to just have to change completely how they play when they're going to, you know, take on Dortmund?
Can I put a name out there?
Sure.
Who's been on the bench and been featured in squads, trained with the first team a bit, but is, I mean, super young. Troy Parrott. He does play center forward.
All right.
I mean...
I saw some talk of Callum Wilson's name being thrown around from Bournemouth. Eddie Howe says they're not going to let him leave.
And they'll hold Spurs' feet to the fire in a way that would be...
Which means that nothing will come of it. Yeah, that's a name that I love. That would be great. I think really highly of him. But man, is this... It's just really, really bad timing. It feels like they're in a bit of a danger zone. Because look, the prize for them now is not like stop the talk about them being a part of a title race or whatever, because they're not, and that's okay. But top four is essential. They have to, like, they're always going to be a club whose key players are in flux. Are they going to leave for Madrid? Are they going to stay? If you want to have any hope of keeping these guys, there needs to be Champions League football at that new stadium next season. And if there's not, it becomes harder to convince Eriksen not to go to Real Madrid, or Pochettino not to go to United, or him to Real Madrid. This is like a dangerous time right now.
I'm just thinking, cheap strikers, January. Who are you going to get?
Yeah, such a throwback in my head. I just go right back to like Luis Saha and like names like that.
I'd even forgotten about
who is
that.
Like this generation. I mean, that was kind of still this generation. Who's like a guy like that? Deeney?
What's Adebayor up to?
Yeah, surely we can get Crouchy back in there, right?
You need someone.
Yeah, I don't know. What do you think? I mean, am I like...
No, you're
this
not.
This is serious, right?
It's extremely worrying because, I mean, it's... All I can think of is, does Dele Alli now play centre forward?
Right.
Has he the nose... Can he score at the pelt required? Because in the past, when Kane was injured last year, Son came in and did an unbelievable job to bridge that gap. And Son is not going to be there, so it's
unbelievable.
I don't know. I honestly think if they can make some kind of a loan deal or do something, they've got to go into the market. I feel that strongly.
Boy, it's tough to go in though when you operate the way they do, and now you're entering the market from a perspective of having no leverage at all.
Oh, nothing.
What do you do? Here's a trivia question for you. You mentioned Harry Kane and Son, the two players who are leaving.
Yeah.
What percentage of Tottenham goals do you think they've scored this season?
65%.
No, I mean, come on.
What?
Let's be real. It's 47%. You completely neutered that question with an insane answer.
I was going to say 50, and I thought, ooh, he's asked this because it's higher.
I mean, I thought 47 was high.
47 is very high.
But you've made a mockery of the whole thing, and now we have to move on.
Hey, Lucas Moura, now's your time.
I mean, he was Premier League Player of the Month for the first month of the season.
Get him down the center.
He just needs to be healthy.
Yeah.
That's their problem right now. We move on. Spurs not the only club in North London going through a bit of a rough patch right now as Arsenal lose again.
Yeah, I've got some things to say about this later in the podcast. I nearly saved the Arsenal chat because it's much more than the loss at West Ham.
Oh my God.
Much more than that with Irish international and birthday boy Declan Rice scoring the winner.
So are you saying that we should table this?
Maybe table it, yeah, because we can talk about Arsenal's woes later on in the podcast. I wouldn't want to upset the flow.
This is what do I do?
This is unprecedented.
The rundown has been invaded. I don't know. I guess we...
No, I have too much Arsenal stuff at the end.
In break. The- Go to break, everyone. Go to break.
Nice football by Spurs, and it could be in. Harry Kane is in, saved by the foot of De Gea. Dele Alli with the header, what a save that is by De Gea. Goes across, the header, the save by De Gea. Dele for Tottenham, saved again by the feet of De Gea. And he goes to the near post, Aguero, another save by David De Gea. Dele on his right foot, Dele! You know the rest.
Sorry, did we not spend enough time on that earlier? We had to relive those saves.
Any excuse for me to get a bit of Chemical Brothers in there.
Arlo White on the call. By the way, did you see? I thought it was actually really cool what they did on Saturday. Oh, here he comes. I'm JJ. Soccer is a sport to be taken seriously. If you're trying to have fun,
you're
then
talking
you're
about
just in the wrong business.
They did the thing where they go on the mopeds between the grounds.
Yeah, what's wrong with that?
It's awesome. It's the third year they've done it. Great. Guys, it's cool. All for the content, all for the clicks.
Oh, I'm on the back of a moped. I'm Lee Dixon. What brings you joy in life?
This, being an arc, being a snark. Ah, no, that's not true.
You have a mailbag prepared.
We do. @SoccerPod, caughtoffsidepod @gmail.com. It's not a very timely opener. Sean Rowden, with Harry Kane out until March.
Oh, for God's sake.
Do you think Spurs should go out and pick up Chicharito, and do you believe he could thrive under Poch? There's no way West Ham are going to give Chicharito to Spurs. It's just not happening. And he's agreed terms with Valencia, and West Ham have blocked that move as well. So Chicharito going anywhere will probably have a lot more to do with what happens with Marko Arnautović, whose brother has come out and told him how he would very much like to go to China, to the Chinese Super League, to win titles. Which is...
I'm sorry, can you say that one more time?
Marko Arnautović's brother wants Marko to go to China to win titles.
All right.
Sam Naramore, love the pod, and I have two questions for you. I'm an avid fan of football, and I've always been a supporter for Bayern Munich, never fully committed to an English team. First question, I'm moving to New York on the 23rd and wanted to know where you guys recommend to watch my football games, preferably a place that has the English pub kind of ambiance. The Barleycorn downtown is a very good one. It's an Arsenal bar, but it's got that ambiance. I always say Carragher's because the food is good, and you can go in there when Liverpool aren't playing, and it's still good. Legends and Football Factory.
Yeah, I've always enjoyed Baker Street.
Baker Street is another good one.
Good place, good food too.
Second question, if Thomas Muller were to leave Bayern and go to one of the big six EPL teams, which team do you think he would most help?
Well, I mean,
that's obvious right now. This is just like a Spurs troll session.
But seriously, though, like I can't think of anyone more perfect for just like, I know he's kind of been, you know, off his game slightly from what Bayern fans are probably used to, but God, like would Spurs kill for him right now?
I think their win percentage is highest when he plays, though. So,
yeah.
Roy, love the podcast. It's something I look forward to as I drive home. Not knowing a great deal about MLS, your analysis has resulted in me now taking a greater interest. This is a bonus on top of your European analysis. Help me choose a team. Come on, you Spurs. Oh. Buy from Australia.
Whoa.
Yeah.
An Australian listener wants to select an MLS club.
Yeah, I thought he'd want it like an A-League team.
Well, he probably, I would assume, has that.
Has one. I would say New York Red Bulls. They're a bit Spursy. Denver Green. Love the pod with Tim Spears talking about Wolves. My high school soccer team took a trip to England during the summer of my junior year circa 2010. And one of the stops was at the Molineux Stadium for a Wolves preseason game against Athletic Bilbao. Stadium was packed and we all left as huge Wolves supporters. It was our first time as Americans experiencing European football in person and we were all blown away by the passion of the fans just for a preseason game. P.S. Also a fan of the Michael Kay Show. Is the voice of Lampard Gerrard watch the Don LaGreca? We can't reveal that.
You'll have to. You can listen in. That's good detective work by whoever that is.
Yeah. Tobias Nike. I think it'd be helpful if you had an upload schedule for the pods. People aren't happy that they don't know when they'll come out.
That's, you know what? That's fair.
Unless
that is certainly fair.
Unless there's the need for an emergency pod, of course, which I love. Ha ha ha. That's fair. We should try and do that. We will not do that.
Are we too inconsistent in like in the days in which we do this?
Look, I'd record every day if it was my choice, but it's not. So
well,
no, we are. We're either Tuesday, Wednesday, or Thursday, and we're the occasional Monday. So
you just listed four of the five,
and sometimes on a Friday if Landon Donovan comes out of retirement again.
So yeah, that was helpful.
Jeff Brokaw. After watching Sunderland Till I Die on Netflix, I have felt a responsibility to bring them back to the Premier League. For some reason, I couldn't get KDB to spend a season on loan with me. And he's playing Championship Manager. And he has them top of the EFL League One. But we don't know what setting it's on, so we don't know.
We record on a Tuesday or Wednesday, or sometimes a Thursday, or maybe it's a Monday. I mean, come on. It's like a friend of mine had a dog, and it's kind of sad, but the dog got something in his eye and had to lose his eye. And so when my friend told us that, we were like, oh my God, that's awful. And my friend, he tried to justify it by saying, no, it's really not that big a deal. Just like picture me if I only had one eye and some hair over it. And I was like, that would be incredibly jarring.
Oh, I don't know what the point of that was. Joel Bruns sent us a picture from Wembley at the weekend. He was at the game. He sent us two really nice pictures, one from outside the ground and one from inside the ground.
Nice.
Andre Millian, Atsio Soccer Pod, incoming red card. Pray silence, please, for the political musings of Mr. Neil Warnock.
I don't know why politicians don't do what the country wanted, if I'm honest. You know, they had a referendum, you know, and now we see different politicians and all, everybody else trying to put the foot in it with Theresa instead of getting behind her. You know, why did we have a referendum in the first bloody place? You know, I can't wait to get out of them, if I'm honest. I think we'll be far better out of the bloody thing, mate, in every aspect. And to hell with the rest of the world, eh?
Football-wise
as well, yeah. Absolutely.
This is a man, if you haven't seen the video footage, this is a man saying, to hell with the rest of the world, while behind him is a sign saying, visit Malaysia. Right? I want Neil Warnock to go and compare his pay packet now at Cardiff from what it was at Sheffield United when he came up 12 years ago. I would say dollars to donuts, he is doing a lot better now through the TV deal, which has come about by the massive interest worldwide in the Premier League and because some of the best players in the world can play there. This idea that England and English football will be better if we cut foreigners out, send them home, is nonsense. And the FA are talking about quotas, Andrew. Quotas on Premier League teams. It can only damage the game. But that was Neil Warnock on Brexit.
Boy, he has really become a shockingly prevalent fixture on this show of the last 3 weeks.
He has wormed his way in and we can't get rid of him.
Like, who knew 3 weeks ago when we talked about his comments about Spurs and Wembley and the new stadium that, like, that would now become, like, the first of many weeks in a row where he would say something ridiculous.
By the way, it's not political for me. If he voted Brexit, for leave, and that's his position, that's fine. My issue is that you're so blind to what, you know, the influx of foreign players and the global game. You can't tell the world to bugger off.
Well, apparently you can.
Well, maybe you can. You're Neil Warnock. We got so many tweets over this. Basically, this is Lampard Gerrard watch, Spygate edition.
Lampard and Gerrard, we're keeping an eye on you.
Leeds United had a very good 2-0 victory over Frank Lampard's Derby County, but the lead into the game was overshadowed by Spygate, Andrew. Belichickian.
Really?
Belichickian style tactics, where Marcelo Bielsa, who apparently has used this as common practice throughout his career in management, sent a spy to Derby County's training ground to watch them train and to film and record them. And Frank was not best pleased about this. And he spoke,
imagine that.
Spoke to Conor McNamara of the BBC Radio 5 Live about the whole thing.
When these sides met earlier in the season, back in August, you suspected, or your club suspected, that there was someone supervising your training and spying on your training at that stage?
The same guy was there, yeah. Our kit man saw him lying in the bushes filming our training.
You've played, obviously, with big teams in this country. You've played abroad as well. Have you ever heard of anything like this before?
No, not really. I mean, listen, people try and pass information, find information. But I've never heard of you know, going to a training ground with on your hands and knees with pliers trying to break into private land to watch training. I've not heard of that.
Apparently, he's admitted tonight he's been doing this since he was manager of Argentina. I mean, years and years and years spying on opposition.
Well, yeah. So, make of that what you will. I don't know how much more I can say about this because, for me, it's not right. And, you know, I'm a big fan from afar of Bielsa. You know, I've got his book at home in the front room. But it's slightly clouded for me today, I've got to say. But if that's how he operates, or has operated, then that's how he does it.
So, yeah, really strange. Not a common practice in English football, I would imagine. Although the dissemination of information from club to club, I'm sure, goes on. I'm sure people know somebody. I might give them a call. What have they been like? Now, yeah, Leeds are always beating Derby. They were so much better. Frank Lampard was magnanimous after the game. He said, we did not play well enough and Leeds were much, much better than us. As they were in the first game when they won 4-1. But it's not ethically great for Bielsa to do this. The EFL have launched an investigation. They're not 100% sure if he's broken any rules, but it's kind of not in the, how shall we put it, the spirit of the game in England to do something like this, or at least not to send a spy in that manner.
I mean, what are you, like, I don't know.
What are you seeing? Set pieces, free kick routines. You're also probably seeing that, as Lampard said before the game, well, Harry Wilson's not going to play for us, so they would have noticed that. But okay, they probably would have known that anyway.
Right. I mean, it just seems so insane to, like, send a guy into the bushes with pliers cutting through fences. Like, what?
Yeah.
Like, what is this?
Don't pretend like it didn't happen in this country.
No, and it was insane when the Patriots had cameras set up around stadiums to spy on signals. And This is like bonkers territory. Is that it for the mailbag?
One final thing. Harry Wilson tweets us, Austin just got their team in MLS. It's looking pretty grim for me in Detroit. Who will get the remaining spot in your guys' opinion? First of all, Austin did get their spot. There was an announcement with Precourt and Garber and Alexi Lalas was there and the whole thing. And there was a glowing crest, which was very nice. And good for Austin. I would say to Harry Wilson, you have got a team who are going to be playing in the NPSL Pro very soon.
Come on, though. Like, what? You know what he's asking, though.
I'm not going to get my big, shiny, fancy MLS team. Go support them until you do get one.
Well, this might have been their best chance.
I don't know.
Don't act like he's an ingrate for asking a question like that, that I'm sure there's fans in cities across the country who would also love to have an MLS team.
But Detroit have a really cool thing going on there.
It's not absurd to want a chance to have that team compete at the highest level. How can you not see that?
They play friendly games against European sides.
Listen to yourself.
There's 10,000 people regularly at Detroit games. That's pretty cool, man. That's a ground level.
I'm not saying it's not cool, but I completely understand his desire to take that to the next level and have those kind of atmospheres be repeated against the likes of, you know, LAFC and the Sounders and Portland. Like, how you're being just like of course support your local clubs. We always you know, push people to want to do that. But
so
Harry Wilson was his name? It's a great question. Sorry that JJ didn't take it seriously.
Don't pine for a team that doesn't exist. Put your money where your mouth is and go and support your local team. And also campaign to institute promotion and relegation. Then you can get to play the Seattles.
You didn't tell me that this question was coming, but off the top of my head, the other cities in contention.
St. Louis.
Nashville.
St. Louis, right?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember now. I know that with Austin getting a club, it seemed like San Antonio was probably off the table.
Phoenix, with the Phoenix Rising.
I feel like I'm forgetting an obvious one. I don't know. If I remember it, I'll say it before the end of the show. But yeah, that's a fine question. At CO Soccer Pod on Twitter, caughtoffsidepod@gmail.com. JJ, I have a what to watch for, but it's very quick. If you have something on any of these games, stop me. Liverpool, Crystal Palace. Liverpool with their 1-0 victory maintain
the 4 points
gap
at the top, yeah.
Let's see. Saturday, 12:30, Arsenal and Chelsea. I won't say much because I guess apparently we have more stuff on Arsenal that is yet to come.
There was a lot of news today that's off the field but not good.
Sunday, 8:30 a.m., Huddersfield Town and Manchester City. J.J. David Wagner, by mutual consent, is no longer Huddersfield Town's manager, and you just can't help but wonder, what if this had happened, say, 5 months ago?
But you wouldn't want the U.S. men's national team playing the style of football that Huddersfield have been playing this season, or even last season.
Well, I mean, maybe they play that style.
Because they have to.
Handicapped and, you know.
Look, he did a good job with it, with not much resources.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, even though things are going poorly, the fact that not only did he gain promotion with them, but managed to keep them up, I think that he will forever be a revered figure there.
That was a miracle last few games at the end of last season.
Incredible.
At the point at Chelsea, I remember watching that game thinking, this is such a backs-to-the-wall effort.
I wonder where he goes now. Like, what is his future?
He is in the Marco Silva category where he will get a job and maybe even a lower tier top flight job again because he's got such a good reputation for working the Oracle with very little.
Sunday, 11 a.m, Fulham and Tottenham. JJ, did you happen to see who just signed at Fulham?
Crazy. Ryan Babel.
By the way, what's crazy is that he's only 32, because I feel like if you told me he was 52, I probably would believe you.
10 years almost outside of the Premier League after he left Liverpool and went on this kind of wandering journey.
He's been signed from Besiktas in Turkey.
Look, you've seen him, particularly when he's been on your screens for the Dutch national team in those friendly games and Nations League games. He's a good player. But Andrew, if you were making a short list of guys to help get this team out of the mire, he would not be on it.
No, and you know clearly there is this feeling of sort of like grasping at straws here.
Yeah,
and it's kind of, I hate to go back on things I said before the season, but it's kind of the way Fulham operated in the summer transfer window. Big names, names that people are familiar with, Andre Schürrle, you know, Callum Chambers. I don't know if this is like that.
By the way, let's just speak while we can about Schürrle's goal at the weekend. That goal, give it goal of the season. Unbelievable technique to pluck that ball from the sky and volley it into the top corner. The fact that he's knocking around a relegation team is bizarre.
Second minute. And then how do they go and lose? It just feels like it's the story of Fulham season. Two own goals in the span of 3 minutes.
Burnley had no shot on target. You got to feel
and
for Fulham.
And scored twice.
Yeah.
That's
winning the Burnley way.
Oh, man. La Liga, JJ. Saturday, 10:15 a.m. Real Madrid and Sevilla. With Real Madrid looking up at Sevilla right now. Madrid are in fourth. Sevilla are in third. They are tied on points, so this could be moving day for Real Madrid as they look to inch their way up closer and closer. I'm never going to foresee a path to them catching Barcelona, but I don't know if they care about finishing second.
It's just a weird optic to look at that table
and see them in fourth. Yeah, I don't know. I guess if there's any fear of them finishing outside a Champions League top four place, because Alaves is right behind Real Madrid, just a point back. Yeah, that's Saturday, 10:15 a.m. Should be a fun one.
Red card.
Can I go first here?
You may.
Okay, my red card goes to Maurizio Sarri, manager of Chelsea.
Uh-oh.
A few days ago, he was talking and discussing his disdain for VAR. Fine, whatever, that's not what this is about. I disagree, but whatever. But he was then asked about how he felt it performed in the World Cup, which prompted this response. Sarri says, quote, "I didn't see anything in the World Cup. I didn't see a match in the World Cup. I don't like the national team because there isn't anything to learn. It is a usual position. Every coach thinks like me. It is unusual to say it. It is impossible to arrange a team very well in 30 days. Every team in the World Cup will lose against the top-level club teams in every match. I think that is normal because in a club you have time to organize a team. But in the national team, you have no time, so it is very difficult to see an organized team in the Euros or the World Cup." What a joyless, arrogant
and I'm joyless
comment. Like, okay, fine. You're smarter than all of us, little peons who enjoy the World Cup for the sheer fun of us brainless fools who don't know our foot from our face. To think, JJ, that we would watch soccer for reasons other than gaining knowledge and maybe just fun and, like, patriotism and you know, just...
The World Cup is fun, but no one is calling it the elite soccer competition. And, by the way, to arrange a team in 30 days, yes, that's half the fun of it. That's why it throws up results like Belgium 3, Japan 2, you
right.
know?
Like, yeah, this is... Thank you. Like, this is not a revolutionary comment. We all understand this, but, like, to think that, like, there's nothing to be taken from the World Cup.
I don't believe that either, by the way.
I just thought
that was him being cornered because VAR worked quite well at the World Cup. And that's him cornered and he's like, I got to get out of here and say, I didn't watch it.
I hate international soccer. What have I said? No, I don't know. He seemed pretty convincing to me.
Mm.
But like...
It's just joyless.
It just feels like a guy who's like jaded and, you know...
And like, he shouldn't be because he... I mean, it's only 20 years ago he was a bank manager.
Is he that guy in a room, like if I were to pull out like, you know, I love like a Kit Kat bar and like I'd be enjoying it and you'd say like, oh man, that looks good. Can I have one? And he'd be over there saying, you know, how many calories are in that? Like he's just that guy.
But he shouldn't be that guy because he left banking, the boringest job, to be a full-time coach and has been very successful. He should be full of the joys of spring.
Yeah, what do you got?
Arsenal. Great work reporting from some ESPN heads today. According to Rafa Honigstein, Arsenal head of recruitment Sven Mislintat is on the way out the door after only a year in the role. He had been appointed by Ivan Gazidis, who is now at AC Milan. Former head of football relations Raul Sinelli was promoted to head of football with Mislintat reporting directly to him. According to club sources, Sinelli, the former director of football at Barcelona, favoured a recruitment policy based on his extensive network of contacts throughout Europe, while Mislintat had been tasked by Gazidis to follow the kind of analytical and stats-based approach that saw 19-year-old midfielder Matteo Guendouzi joined from French second division club Lorient, 22-year-old Uruguayan international Lucas Torreira arrived from Sampdoria, both of whom have been successes in my view. And... double whammy, Gabriel Mercati almost simultaneously dropped this article explaining why Unai Emery said rather curiously last week that he could only make loan signings in January. In short, it refers to the decisions made last January and the money pumped into signing Aubameyang, Mkhitaryan's contract and re-signing Ozil. Only one of the three of these moves have worked out and it's a three-year plan that's going to see them hemorrhage $159 million.
And if they sell Ozil, they're never getting back the value.
No, no. These guys are all in their late 20s. And that's why Aaron Ramsey had to go. So you're looking at this here. Unai Emery has no honeymoon period. He has, I guess. But he's going to have to make the best of this and this challenge for top four with what he's got. He's going to have to prove himself as a top manager. This is pretty dire stuff. These contracts are not nearly... in their final stages. That's a lot of money to go out. When will Arsenal be able to sell again? And a point that's made out by Gabriel Mercati in his piece is that it's not like Kroenke flashes the cash even when they have a lot of money.
Yeah.
This is bad. If you watch that team against West Ham at the weekend, they are short 3, 4, 5 defenders maybe.
You wouldn't have necessarily thought. Now, I know that those are big name players, but like, would you have thought that it would debilitate the club for at least a year moving forward?
So the money is unbelievable. The wages. And by the way...
But all we hear about is all this TV money being injected into clubs. And Arsenal are one of the richest clubs in the world. I mean,
but they're within the... I guess they're operating within the constraints of the club itself, of what the owner wants to do. And this just doesn't jive. Ozil was in and around 9 million and he wanted 20 million a year. And they gave him close to that, according to the article. He doesn't play. It's wild. It's absolutely wild. And you're wondering if Unai Emery's going to get the crack of the whip he thought he'd get at the club.
No, it doesn't seem like it right now.
Caught Offside's Man of the Match.
JJ, my Man of the Match is Petr Cech. We talked about him a little bit earlier with David Priest. But I've got some more, and we're going to play...
Oh, no.
Czech trivia.
That's unfair, but go on.
Why? These are all, with the exception of maybe one of these are eminently gettable.
Yeah, I'm just not in Czech. Okay, go on. I have read none of the, I was going to say eulogies to Czech. He's not dead, but I've...
No.
I've read none of the tributes to him, so I'm not up on my stats.
He will be retiring at the end of the season, by the way. This is not an immediate retirement. He's going to play out the rest of the year. All right, here we go. Pitercheck has 202 clean sheets all time. That's most in Premier League history. Who's number two on that list?
Peter Schmeichel.
No, David James.
Well, David James played till he was 40 across how many clubs? As they say in baseball, he's a compiler.
Who are you mad at?
He's a compiler.
Number two, Pitercheck has won the Premier League's Golden Gloves Award four times. It's the award given out for the keeper with the most clean sheets in a season. This award started in 04-05, by the way, I should say that. That could help you. That could help you. He's won this award four times. One other keeper has also won it four times. Can you name that keeper? It's a little tricky.
It's not Van der Sar.
No. Now, when you say it's not, like, what am I supposed to do with that? Is that your answer? Or are you cheating?
Go on, I don't know.
Joe Hart.
Oh, for God's sake.
Joe Hart.
By the way, Burnley have won three on the bounce since Hart's been dropped. Just saying.
Number three, Pitercheck wears protective headgear, of course, after a scary collision with this player from back in 2006.
Stephen Hunt.
That's correct, of Reading.
Yeah.
Very good.
It was
you're
an
on the
accident,
board.
And Mourinho called him a wolf.
You're on the board. Number four, Chelsea signed Pitercheck from this French club in 2004.
Ooh, no, that I don't know.
Rennes.
Stade Rennes.
Yeah, Rennes. And last but not least, JJ, Chelsea defeated Bayern Munich on penalties in the 2012 Champions League final. Cech played the role of hero in this game, saving one penalty in extra time and another one in the penalty shootout. Can you name the Bayern players who had those penalties saved?
Muller.
No.
Ribery.
No.
Oh, for God's sake.
I believe Ribery drew the penalty.
It wasn't Schweini.
He missed in the penalty shootout, but he
wasn't saved.
It wasn't saved.
All right, I'm blanking.
So in extra time, Ribery drew a penalty. Drogba took down Ribery, and Arjen Robben had his penalty saved. It was a meek, pathetic attempt.
Oh, that was it was a dribbler, wasn't it?
It was awful. And then in the penalty shootout, Ivica Olic had his penalty saved.
Olic, right. I remember that now.
Yeah. There you go, Pitercheck trivia. You did well.
I had a lot of trivia surrounding the question, but not the actual answer.
I love when you say it's not Van der Sar. Like, okay.
Hedging your bets, it's called.
What do you have?
My man of the match is United States Youth International, Charlie Kelman, who scored from inside his own half on his professional debut in England. Playing for Southend in the third tier, which is League One, Kelman lobbed. He didn't lob. I'm reading from an ESPN article.
He kind of did. I mean,
it's not a lob.
Past the midway line, it's hard to call it a lob.
A lob. But he absolutely pinged it right over the Plymouth goalkeeper in the second minute of stoppage time. If you could write a goal, a spectacular goal in your debut, that would be it. But it wasn't enough to prevent Southend losing 3-2 on Saturday. Listen to the audio. There's no commentary. The best thing about this is the thwack of when he hits the ball. You can tell.
Good for you. 17.
Unbelievable. What a story.
Well, here we go. Now a new young player for us to be obsessed with.
Yeah, because you're going to start watching League One.
Maybe I will.
There's no chance. Absolutely no chance.
What do you know about it?
By the way, the goalkeeper did not cover himself in glory. No. But then again...
Did he lose sight of the ball? Like, his dive at the end, I was like, where are you diving right now?
But do you not remember Steve Harper when Xabi Alonso did his from the halfway? That was pathetic, too.
I mean, usually... Like, if a guy is going to score from the halfway line or beyond, like, a goalkeeper is never really going to cover himself in glory.
Well, now, Beckham nailed Neil Sullivan. That was perfect. There was no comedy dive. Beckham's just measured it perfectly.
The one that I always felt bad for, when Tim Howard scored his, the way the wind took that ball and just, like,
put it over
fired it
Robinson,
into the...
wasn't it?
Was it Paul Robinson? No, Paul Robinson scored.
Oh, he scored. Excuse me.
Here was. I got the highlight here. We'll listen to it.
This eagle is running away from Sylvain Distamp. Goalkeeper to goalkeeper. Oh, it's in! Can you believe that? Tim Howard will take the acclaim. It bounced right over Bogdan, and it's 1-0 Everton in bizarre circumstances.
That was ridiculous.
I
mean, it was God assisted.
Yeah, and to Howard's credit, he almost looked angry. And he said afterwards, because he, I think, had been on the other side of that once before, so he knows how it felt, so he wasn't going to celebrate. So, yeah, there you have it.
It's the goalkeepers' union. They just want to look after each other.
Yeah, which is kind of nice. Hey, that's it, my friend.
Beefy podcast.
Yeah, it really was. I enjoyed it thoroughly. I hope all of you out there did as well. Remember, if you get the chance, rating us on iTunes goes a long way. If you want to get on there and give us a little 5 stars, it can only help.
And people have been doing that.
Oh, really?
It's been very nice. Very, very nice. I would like more. Much more.
You're demanding.
But I do appreciate it. Also, my friend, I'm going to demand one thing of you. You can't stall on this rap battle no longer. Battle is happening next week.
No one is asking for it.
Absolutely no one is.
Yeah. But maybe we should take that as a sign. We're doing it. People are not shy about telling us what they want us to do, and no one cares about this.
All right. Well, are you going to set a challenge for them? Are you going to say, like,
no.
Some kind of likes?
No, look, we said we'd do it, we'll do it, but I'm not in any rush, quite frankly. All right. Are you?
Well, I've got some nice Brendan Rodgers.
Look, of the two of us, only one has provided this. EPL, back for more. So don't make it seem like I'm dodging.
You are a recording artist, technically.
Yeah. Hey, this was fun, my friend. Enjoy games the rest of the week. There's an FA Cup replay tomorrow. Newcastle won today, by the way, it bears mentioning.
Which is good for them. A bit of joy on the Tyne.
Yep. To you, I say...
Take you later, fun boy.
See ya.
Take care.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.